Well, hey, a long time no speak. I said I was going to give you a bonus episode, and here we are with our latest guests on Soundtrack in Ryan Lott, Rafiq Bhatia and Ian Chang, who come together under the banner of Son Lux. And under that banner, they provided the fantastic score for Daniel's Kwan and Scheinert's mind-bending multiverse romp that is the wonderful Everything, Everywhere, All at Once. Now, what to say about this film? Whoo! I had a very interesting conversation with a cab driver last night about it, who said that he said he found it really confusing and couldn't work out what was going on. And I was like, stick with it because it is incredibly fulfilling. There's a beautiful and brilliant kind of reveal at the end of the film, which then makes almost everything that's gone before that make sense. But what I would say is just kind of go in there not knowing too much, not having any expectations, but allow the film to take you, allow the film to kind of guide you on this journey. I got quite kind of deep about it with the boys because I've watched it a couple of times, and every time I do watch it, I kind of feel like I get more from it. So it's out there. It is like nothing I've ever seen before, and the work that has gone into this film is extraordinary. Before we hear from Ryan, Rafiq and Ian, a word from our friends at Gusto. Now, I might have mentioned this, I think I have, that I'm quite into cooking. However, going to be honest with you, I've got to the point where I've fallen into total complacency with what I cook. It's basically the same meals every week. I've bored myself. God knows how my family feel. Well, thank goodness for Gusto and its menu of over 250 recipes to spice things up. What's not to love about a box arriving with pre-portioned fresh ingredients and easy to follow recipes? This week, we had the most wonderful chicken pie with this delicious mash on top. And then we also had this fantastic salmon pesto with beautiful pasta. It was delish. Even if you are in any way intimidated by the idea of cooking, believe me, Gusto makes it so easy and totally achievable. Gives you everything you need to create incredible home-cooked meals every week. And as I said, there are over 250 recipes to choose from and have them delivered to your door any day of the week. How would you like 60% off your first box and then 25% off all boxes for 2 months? You would? Good. Just head to gusto.co.uk and use the code SOUND for 60% off your first box and 25% off all boxes for 2 months. I'll stick a link up on socials to make it easy for you to click on through. I'm hungry now. But first, we need to get to Ryan, Rafiq and Ian, whose work on the score to Everything Everywhere All at Once had to mirror the complexity of the narrative without confusing matters further. No mean feat, but one they managed to pull off beautifully. And we'll begin with their cue, Dogfight. Listen, thank you so much, guys. Really appreciate your time. I was just saying huge congratulations on the film. And I had such a lovely time listening to Song Exploder the other day, actually, talking about that's a beautiful episode, actually, and just a really brilliant insight into that one part of what you've done. Do you mind if we go back though, just in terms of how this project was presented to you and your kind of genuine reaction to what was told to you or what insight you were given to this project from the Daniels?
Daniels approached us as a band, and they specifically approached us as a band wanting the band as a group to score their film, which was cool and unprecedented because we had never done that before. Ryan had some scoring experience in the past. He's done a few features and a lot of other stuff, but it was cool that Daniels had kind of checked out not only Sunlux's catalog, but as well like each of our solo catalogs as well. They wanted us specifically. And one of the first things they did was they sent us a script, which we read. And the script, for those of you that have seen the movie, you know, it's maybe 2 hours and 20 minutes or so. The script probably that we read probably would have turned into like a 4-hour movie.
Wow. So
there's even more ideas out there that didn't make it through. One such idea was a universe called Spaghetti Baby Noodle Boy, where there's a macaroni in a pot of spaghetti that feels out of place. So that never made it into the film, but that was in the script. Yeah.
There was also, guys, I just remembered this, or Paul reminded me of this just the other day, Paul Rogers, the editor. Do you remember there was a universe where Evelyn was an urn of ashes?
Yeah, that talks.
That talks. And Jobu and Evelyn as ashes and one other character were all friends. Like Jobu and Evelyn were actually like buddies, like, but it was like dead Evelyn or something. It was like so many weird corners of this. Wow. This multiverse, like you can't even imagine.
And there, in the movie, there is a single shot, I believe, of a baby noodle boy and a single shot of an urn talking that you would not notice it if you watched it the first time, but it's in there somewhere.
Well, I almost feel like this is a film that I'll even be watching, you know, even in the, I think three times I've watched it now, and every time you watch it, you obviously kind of, you see and you feel and you experience more. There's kind of like, you know, it's almost like a constant moving beast, almost weirdly, in the same way that the film is in itself, is that it unveils so much more to you the more you kind of invest in it in a way. And it's a kind of one of those lovely things that I'm so looking forward to almost in years to come, going back to watch it and it having a completely different and unique reaction on me in a way. You know what I mean? In terms of, I think it's something that will constantly live and grow as a thing, and that as people we'll have at different points of our life it will mean different things to us. I can't imagine though your reaction in reading that script and thinking as creatives, because I love that notion as well that they came to you as the three of you as this band, but really were so interested in what the three of you individually have brought to that band to then explore for this film. I love that, the kind of almost sort of, you know, peeling back the layers of you guys as a band to then explore what you do individually, but also as a collective. But when you read that script, what was your first kind of reaction in terms of, did they give you any indication of what they thought they wanted or needed as a score or music in this film? And what was your reaction to what you initially thought when reading that?
First of all, thank you. You just said something really pretty, really profound and beautiful. And, just the way that you have this sense that the film will, like, kind of over time for you mean different things and will itself evolve and your understanding of it will evolve. We all absolutely strive to make art of which that could be said. So to hear it said is, I want to thank you for expressing that sentiment. Oh. It really means a lot to us. Yeah, to feel seen in that first conversation from two extremely creative guys well on their way in their own corner of the universe, taking over their own world and imagining us as being a part of it was humbling and also like such an honor. But the particular way in which they approached us, wanting all of the different pieces and parts of us, both collectively and individually, was so much more than your average ask. You know, we heard that song. You know that song on that one record of yours? It's like, we just couldn't get it out of our heads. And like, we just, we was like, that is, you know, that's what we want. You know, it wasn't that. It wasn't that at all. It was like, you guys have done gone so many different places, and even in your own music, you're from one in within one song, you're exploring these different universes that shouldn't really go together, but then somehow do. It's like they spoke to the essence of the thing that we were, you know, striving to achieve in our music, and as such, we felt so seen, you know. And what a cool thing! Of course, then they sent us a script, and I was like, I think they have the wrong people.
Ryan thought there was something wrong with his PDF. Like, he was like,
I mean, how could there not be something wrong with this file? It doesn't. Nobody. This isn't a movie someone's going to make, you know, like you can't just do this. Like numerous times it was just like, I've got to be missing pages or something's got to be out of order.
You can't just do this. How dare you?
You can't just.
What are you thinking? How do you write something like that to start with? I mean, oh my God, it's just, oh, to have a mind like that, to have minds like that. It's just, yeah.
Not to mention a heart.
Yeah. But also that script had enough space for you guys. It had enough space for the performances. It had enough space for all those other creatives to come in and collaborate. You know, that's the brilliant thing about it, I think, as well, is that, yeah, it's like the best ticket on to come on a ride ever, really, in a way.
That's a really great insight. And I feel like I really don't hear people talking about the space in this movie, except for like obviously the rock universe, but like, you know, that is totally a thing, and that was something that Daniels were very attuned to. Like, I feel like I learned a good deal about pacing and like when to sort of like play the cards in your hand, you know, emotionally speaking, with the music. Like, there would be cues that we would send over where they would be like, okay, great, this is perfect, except take this and like delay it until the next shot. Because if you put it right here, you're telling the audience how to feel if you put it there. But if you put it slightly later, all of a sudden, like, they're going to be feeling that thing and you're going to sound, you're not scoring the scene, you're scoring their emotional reaction to the scene. And having that insight about music shows that they had it about everything and brought it to everything. And I think that's a big part of the reason why the film in its final form ended up hitting so hard, is because without like a really keen sensibility about pacing, like, it would have just been chaos, you know?
Yeah. There's so much going on at times, but there's also so much simplicity to it, I think, sometimes as well, in terms of when you kind of think about it, sometimes it can be very simple, even though, you know, you kind of go, my God, there's so much going on. But actually, it's really intimate. It's really kind of personal. It's really kind of, you know, nail on the head sort of thing at moments. And with the music as well, there's, I mean, I don't know where to start, to be honest, in terms of talking about this. I mean, how much did you, I mean, I'm assuming there's so much that you wrote that didn't make it in the film as well. But in terms of there, it feels like the music is a constant companion in this film. There's just this beautiful soundscape throughout it that feels like it's our kind of almost a bit of a tour guide, really, in a way. He's not telling us where to go, but it's kind of there by our side in a way. Yeah, feels like a kind of trusted friend.
I think the sort of role of the music did have to play. It had to kind of serve seemingly two different kind of goals that one would think would be at odds with one another, but they're not, which is to A, kind of like accompany different universes in such a way where, like, you know, if you snap into, say, like the Alphaverse for like 5 seconds, like the music needs to be able to communicate that we're in the Alphaverse like very quickly, and people need to be able to feel that. But at the same time, the music also played this more, like you very well described, like a tour guide, this kind of almost like an anchor. So, and it's kind of, Rafiq, you have a really nice analogy for this, which is like the looms on like a carpet or fabric or something, where like the, I'll let you tell it because you're better.
Well, yeah, like it's like, you know, when you're like threading together, like you're weaving something and there's like the vertical strands on, you know, the loom. And I think of those like the many universes that needed to kind of stand without overlap with each other. You know, like we needed on a primordial kind of precognitive level to like, just from the sound texture alone, be able to tell what universe we were in. And that was like, you know, a big task that we were given early on was like, help us differentiate these things so that like before the camera can tell us or before like the script can tell us, like the music tells us where we are, you know, just from a texture level. Because that has to happen faster than any melody. Then if you have all of these universes that are like basically uncorrelated as your vertical strands, horizontal strands that weave them together are the melodies, because the melodies can be dressed in the clothing of any of the universes. And they can be, you know, like the way that we associated Claire de Lune with Jamie Lee Curtis, for example, which was another brilliant Daniel suggestion that at first we thought was completely ridiculous and far-fetched and turned out to be like an amazing idea. We liked it so much that we were really playing that hand, and they were like, oh my God, you guys really like went with that Claire de Lune thing. Like it was just like, but you know, that was like super sinister in the universe where she's like a villain, but then you hear it tender when they're in the hot dog hands romance and she's just at home playing it with her little feet. That's the kind of thing that having those melodic themes allowed us to do, is to start to take these things that were like designed to feel uncorrelated and weave them together as the story starts to weave them together, and to be able to imbue that resulting mass with the emotional weight that we needed to like give the punch of the story a sound.
The music, maybe not all of it, but some of it must have needed to have been there and available whilst they were shooting.
Yeah, that's right. And that's one of the ways in which this project was quite unique, is that we as composers were involved very early in the process, not only in post-production, which is common, but during production and even in pre-production. So they enlisted our help in September of 2019. And weren't shooting until mid-January. So that gave us a chance to sort of like begin to get into their dream and find sounds that felt consistent with that that dream and throw our own ideas into the mix as well. And to have our, both to help them plant the seeds, but also to kind of plant some of our own seeds was such an honor. And again, the way that filmmaking generally goes is you're not usually afforded that privilege as a composer. Yeah. It also speaks to the quality of process that Daniel's cultivated, welcoming their friends and people they admire and people basically welcoming so many others into the mix and doing it as a group, as a family expression, while also having their hands in every little aspect, including the music. Rafiq mentioned earlier, just briefly, but it's worth bulleting that, you know, some of the best ideas and certainly some of the best ideas out of the gate came from them musically. It was always up to us to execute them, or at least almost always. There were a couple of places where they actually did the music execution themselves.
There was a place where a very, very bad trumpet player was called for, and that was an incredible Daniel Kwan cameo.
It's for the Planet of the Apes Hot Dog Hands music, where there's like the Space Odyssey theme being played. That was Daniel Kwan trumpet. Yeah.
Zarathustra for the shot for shot recreation of that monkey's hip scene in 2001 Space Odyssey. Yeah, but just to answer your question more briefly, yes, we were able to get a bunch of temp music into the process so that they were editing to some score. And then along the way, another thing that composers never have the privilege of hearing is, hey, let us know how to change, you know, if we need to change the edit to make it more so you don't have to mess up the music. That kind of deference.
Wow.
That kind of deference to music, it again represents a sort of cooperative style that they maintain throughout. And it's super rare. For anyone listening who is into scoring and has had any experience with it, you'll know that's just like very rare.
What did they say to you? Did they give you any indication of what they were looking for? The cue where we have the incredibly fast cuts of Evelyn's character, which in my mind is almost the sound that we would hear when our life is flashing in front of us. You know, it's that kind of, it's almost that noise of kind of, it's your entire life. The sound of your entire life is almost kind of being thrown at you in a kind of water balloon style. But what did the Daniel say to you in terms of, this is what we're thinking, or did they just, I don't know, was it just a case of, here's the script, come and tell us what you think, or what were those conversations?
Well, I think one of the things that they said right out of the gate is that, as Ryan kind of described, it's like they wanted all angles of us, both individually and as a band, to be put forth into this multiversal movie. And they did already have sort of the idea that, like, the direction that of kind of coming up with some melodies that can kind of weave together different universes, that was something that they mentioned early on, that they wanted sort of melodic theme. And it's funny that you mentioned that one scene, because the way that came about was actually very music forward, because we had sent them a bunch of, you know, like we had said, we had developed a bunch of material and sent ideas to them while they were still in the shooting and editing phase. And one of the things they came up with in the edit was basically we attract these sort of like gestural paint splatter type drum solos. Because they had mentioned that there was going to be some scenes where there's going to be a lot of cuts like this. And we tracked a bunch of them, and then Ryan kind of made a few selections and like sent them along. And one of them, they basically edited that scene to one of the drum solos, like without like chopping up the drum solo. Like they like kept like the integrity of what we sent and then just like chopped it to it. Like it was like a crazy music video. And that was how it started. And then from there, they were really kept pushing us to like add more. Like we think we'd already reached it to the max, and they're just like, oh, but what if like there was like this or that? And we're like, okay, let's keep layering on. And that's kind of how it became this, you know. I loved your description of it's like as if it's like your life flashing before your eyes, because we do see that moment musically and in the movie as like a very spiritual moment.
And then you have this incredible song that you guys wrote as well. I'm so addicted to the song. I can't stop listening to it. It's so great. When did you know that you had to write an original song for it and where it was going to go? And then also getting, you know, Mitski and David Byrne on it. And am I right in thinking as well that Randy Newman's on the score as well?
Yes, he plays Raccoonie.
Yeah, he voices Raccoonie. And then, Genius. So one of our tasks was to kind of write like a fragment of a song that Randy Newman is singing along with one of the other characters played by Harry Shum Jr. in the film. And the idea was that on the soundtrack is the actual song that they're singing together in the kitchen. And once the score was wrapped, it was time to flesh out this full song, which became a duet with between me and Randy.
Wow!
Yeah, Ryan was Harry Shum Jr. in the score, like the score album, and
it's so stupid, one of the
many ways, and one of the probably furthest out from our comfort zone that the Daniels pushed us into was writing a song in the style of Randy Newman for them.
Yeah, it's called Now We're Cooking.
Yeah.
That's great.
It's really not that crazy.
We're not that crazy.
A couple of mammals making gravy.
Right?
Together, you and me, a multi-species team, we're a family.
Aww.
Culinarily. Now we're cooking. While nobody's looking. Yeah. We're family, culinarily.
Raccoonie, I don't know what I'd do without you.
Yeah, we make a pretty good team.
Damn right.
For This Is a Life, that was a result of, at some point, I think A24 saw a screener of the movie in progress and was just like, believed in it even more after seeing it. And I think this is what happened. But basically, we got an email at some point being like, hey, like, we want to kind of enrich the culture of the music around this film. So we want to like have some songs with guests on them, like make a list of like your biggest dreams in terms of guests. So David Byrne was on that list, and so is Mitski. And Mitski was something that also I know she means a lot to Daniel Kwan. I believe that at some point he shared a screenshot with us of his top most listened to like artists on Spotify, and us and Mitski were like the top two.
Wow.
So yeah, we made this dream list, and A24 like made it happen, and they wanted us to do an end credits song. And the way that kind of came about, I think originally we were thinking something kind of energetic, like a fun song, sort of, you know, to finish out, you know, what is a wild and fun movie. But David Byrne actually had really good insight that, like, after all of that, it's like it'd be nice to kind of have not only something that you can kind of like slow down to and breathe to, but something that really captures sort of the soul of the movie, which is really like a family drama.
I almost like see them dancing it like their first dance at their wedding again, almost if they were redoing their vows, it could be their first dance in a way. It's like,
Someone showed me a video of someone did their first dance at a wedding to that song. I don't know if y'all saw that. Yeah. That's so cool.
I mean, that's so, you know, cool.
It is really cool. You know, I think David deserves the credit for imbuing the song with that kind of energy of choice and commitment. I mean, I think certainly more than the lyrics that I wrote, which I wrote the part that Mitski sings. And I wrote those lyrics. That was like the first step. And then David wrote the counter song that sort of weaves in between and then joins in the end. And his lyrics really turned it even more specifically toward some of the film's most important expressions. Maybe one of them certainly being like, of all the choices we have, you know, to make a choice for each other is that, like, that parking lot scene. Yeah, I think he captured that with his lyrics.
It's such a beautiful thing. I've got a kind of weird, well, it's not a weird dream, but it's a kind of wish that you guys, I'm not even sure if it's possible, but the score is played live at Glastonbury with the film playing, and then we have Mitski and David Byrne, you know, at the end coming out. How awesome would that be? Oh my God.
We'll officially put that out into the universe.
Emily Evis, if you're listening, make it happen.
Not out of the question. A lot crazier things have happened, to be honest.
It would be a huge challenge to recreate the score live, but
stranger things have happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I certainly think excerpts of it, you know, could definitely be done. I mean, really, with the money, anything could be done.
Did you know when you were done? Was it an obvious thing when you need to stop? Because I can imagine almost that, I don't know, you kind of could have just kept going on almost in a way. You know what I was almost talking about?
Well, we definitely did. We definitely kept going and going and going and going. But as far as the music, the versions of the scores that, you know, made it into the film, what say you, Rafiq?
Well, we were at the film mix where the score and the sound design and the ADR and the production audio all gets like woven together, and it's pretty unusual that a composer would be present for that entire thing. But we were there helping that all happen, and sound design was there, and it was a really fun and really educational experience for all of us. And we got to get our hands dirty, like figuring out how to reconcile all of these things, you know, because both departments had been working so hard, but like because of how much there was to do, there was like, you know, we were all just kind of imagining what the other person was going to do and like playing like a little game of chess psychologically with each other. And it was so cool to like get to be in the same room with all those folks. Unbridled Sound, they're really inspiring, and bring it all together. But while that was happening, there was this one cue. It's a very important cue emotionally. Mm-hmm. And it was very special to Dan Kwan because he cried when he was editing it. And it was like one of the only times that that has happened, I think. And I cried a lot when I was working on the score to this movie, but especially that cue, like it just kept happening over and over again. I was like getting frustrated because I was like, this is so intense emotionally to watch these performances back over and over again. Like we had the sort of rough thing. I would say the second or third version that we submitted was like basically what ended up in the movie. But all the details and the precise placement of each event and like all that stuff, like there was just revision after revision after revision. And we were just trying to like get it perfect. Like, can we make it perfect? And so while this film mix was happening, I was squirreled away in another room somewhere by myself, like making little tweaks to this thing, like, you know, and then I would pass a version in and we'd put it in the cut and watch it down and be like, okay, it's almost there. But like, what if this was like a little quieter? And what if the, you know, like, and so then I'd go back and I'd like crunch away at it again. And that reel that that cue is in was the last reel that they committed, you know, like that was like the last one that they printed. And right before they hit the print button, we snuck in one revision and then they printed it. And then Ryan and I got in a lift and went to the airport. So it was like literally the end, the very last second we like put another thing in the movie. And for the 9 months after that, like between that day and when the premiere was screened at South by Southwest,
yeah,
I would like periodically wake up in the middle of the night and just be like, oh my God, like, is it gonna work? Did we do okay? Like, because by the end of it, I was so acclimated to the music that I could not tell whether or not it was effective anymore. And I think that was like part of the problem was that we were just like splitting hairs because we just wanted it to be right. But we couldn't, you know, you lose perspective. The closer up you get to something, the harder it is to really see it for what it is. My fiance's father, who's actually a huge fan of the movie, he has a googly eye watch. Like the face of his watch is a googly eye now. I have a running note in my phone of all of the like profound things that he says. And one of them that I keep thinking about ever since he said it to me was, you have to walk away from something to be able to walk up to it, you know? You don't really know what it is until you've had that space. And so, but being in the theater with 1,200 people at South By and like, feel it almost felt like a concert or something, like the waves of emotions and laughter and stuff in the room. And we could feel in real time, like, okay, it's working. Like these people get it. And when that part happened and I like looked around the room and saw people wiping away tears, I was like, oh, thank God. Like it worked.
I can sleep finally. Yeah. I can get a good night's sleep again. Listen, I could talk to you for hours about it, but we've unfortunately run out of time. But I just want to say good luck as well with all these amazing, you know, accolades and nominations that you've been given, and I wish you all the best. And I cannot wait to see, you know, both what's next from the band, but also in terms of this new journey that you have in the world of film. It's very, very exciting. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much,
Edith. Yeah,
you take care. Pleasure. Yeah, so. See you later. I'll have to get sucked into a bagel. Bye. From the Score to Everything Everywhere All at Once, that is A Choice, rounding off this latest episode of Soundtrackin' with Son Lux. My huge thanks to Ryan, Rafiq and Ian for taking the time to talk to me. Everything Everywhere All at Once is available to watch right now on Amazon Prime and via various home entertainment formats. It was a genuine pleasure to get to meet the boys in person just this past weekend at the BAFTA nominees party at the National Gallery. I ran up to them, threw my hands into theirs and introduced myself, and they were very beautiful and warm and generous. So thank you so much, and a pleasure to meet you guys in person. If you're new to the podcast and you like what you hear, please head to edithbowman.com to catch up with all of our previous episodes, or do you know what? Wherever you get your podcasts, we'd very much appreciate if you'd rate, review and subscribe. And do you know what? Whilst you're there, tell your mates. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram and Twitter. We are at Soundtrackin' UK. And please do keep telling people about us on your socials. We really do appreciate your support. Next up, you might have heard that there's a brand new Ant-Man. I'm just going to point out that my son Rudy has come into the room to try and distract me whilst I'm doing this voiceover. Hi, Rudy. You can say hello.
I'm right, I'm good. I was just about to say that.
Say hello.
Hello.
There we go. Ant-Man and Quantumania. Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania is out in cinemas now. We're very happy to be joined by the director, Peyton Reed, our next guest on Soundtrackin'. I very much look forward to the pleasure of your company then. Say bye, Rudy.